The New Path, My Life with Paramahansa Yogananda by Swami Kriyananda, J. Donald Walters. Introduction to this revised edition, Swami Kriyananda. Since the first publication of this book, 30 years ago, it has appeared in several editions and languages. Recently I reread it and decided that, after so many years, it could do with revision. And though the same number of years of my own life have passed also, bringing me now to the age of 82, I decided not to bring the reader comparably up to date on my own life. Essentially, indeed, this book was never intended to be an autobiography, so much as an account of my life with Paramahansa Yogananda. My basic purpose was to tell about his life from the perspective of a disciple. This would, I felt, fill a much-neglected need. I've written here about the deep humility which caused him, in his autobiography, to relate more about other great saints he had known than about himself. Indeed, the average reader might receive the impression from that autobiography that the author himself was not even a master, but simply a devout, earnest spiritual seeker, which had the good fortune to meet all those saints. What I have done here, then, is complete the story of his life from an objective point of view. In this sense, I might even have titled this book A Gospel of Paramahansa Yogananda, were it not for the fact that I have also written other books containing hundreds more of his sayings. This book is also, and primarily, a sequel to Yogananda's autobiography, which, I am told, has become the best-selling spiritual autobiography of all time, and is still, after more than 60 years, among the 10 best-selling spiritual books in the world. The underlying saga of my own life has been universal in that it has mostly been a search for truth. Thus, this book is really more concerned with principles than with persons or events. My story, detailed in part one of this book, begins with my boyhood search. I sought by many paths, scientific, political, artistic, literary, dramatic, religious, philosophical, and finally spiritual. My hope is that this book will touch a receptive chord in others, for what I have dealt with here is a search that is central to the life of every man. One day, a disciple asked Yogananda, "Will I ever leave the spiritual path?" "How could you?" the master asked. "Everyone in the world is on the spiritual path." This book is an attempt to demonstrate the truth of those words. I met Paramahansa Yogananda on September 12th, 1948, at the age of 22. I had just read his autobiography. It had inspired me to take the next bus across the country from New York to Los Angeles, where he lived. So deeply had this book affected me that the first words I addressed to him, they would have been inconceivable for me even 1 week earlier, were, "I want to be your disciple." The guru must have seen how desperate I was for the truths he had to share, for he accepted me at that very meeting as a monastic disciple. From then on, I lived with him for the remaining 3.5 years of his life and have served him in his work throughout my life. Part 1, Chapter 1. The Pilgrim Whittles His Staff. There are times when a human being, though perhaps not remarkable in himself, encounters some extraordinary person or event that infuses his life with great meaning. My own life was blessed with such an encounter more than 60 years ago, in 1948. Right here in America, of all lands, the epitome of bustling efficiency, material progressiveness, and pragmatic know-how, I met a great God-known master whose constant vision was of eternity. His name was Paramahansa Yogananda. He was from India, though it would be truer to say that his home was the whole world. Had anyone suggested to me prior to that meeting that so much radiance, dynamic joy, unaffected humility, and love might be found in a single human being, I would have replied, though perhaps with a sigh of regret, that such perfection is not attainable by man. And had anyone suggested to me further that divine miracles have occurred in this scientific age, I would have laughed outright, for in those days, proud as I was in my intellectual 20th century so-called wisdom, I mocked even the miracles of the Bible. No longer. I have seen things that made a mockery of mockery itself. I know now from personal experience that divine wonders do occur on earth. And I believe that the time is approaching when countless men and women will no more think of doubting God than they doubt the air they breathe. For God is not dead. It is man only who dies to all that is wonderful in life when he limits himself to worldly acquisitions and to advancing himself in worldly eyes, but overlooks those spiritual realities which are the foundation of all that he truly is. Paramahansa Yogananda often spoke of an America's high spiritual destiny. When I first heard him do so, I marveled. America? All that I knew of this country was its materialism, its competitive drive, its smug, no-nonsense attitude toward anything too subtle to be measured with scientific instruments. But in time, that great teacher made me aware of another aspect, an undercurrent of divine yearning, not in our intellectuals, perhaps, our self-styled cultural representatives, but in the hearts of the common people. Americans' love of freedom, after all, began in the quest centuries ago for religious freedom. Their historic emphasis on equality and on voluntary cooperation with one another reflects principles that are taught in the Bible. Americans' pioneering spirit is rooted in these principles. And when no frontiers remained to our people on the North American continent, and they began exporting their pioneering energies abroad, again, it was the spirit of freedom and willing cooperation that they carried with them. In these twin principles, Paramahansa Yogananda saw the key to mankind's next upward step in evolution. The vision of the future he presented to us was of a state of world brotherhood in which all men would live together in harmony and freedom. As a step toward this universal fulfillment, he urged those people who were free to do so to bend together into what he called world brotherhood colonies, little spiritual communities where people living and working together with others of like mind would develop an awareness of the true kinship of all men as sons and daughters of the same one God. It has been my own lot to found the first such world brotherhood colonies, examples of what Yogananda predicted would someday become thousands of such communities the world over. Because the pioneering spirit is rooted in principles that are essentially spiritual, implying the perennial quest for a higher as well as a better way of life, that spirit has not only expanded men's frontiers outwardly, in recent decades especially, it has begun to interiorize them, to expand the inward boundaries of human consciousness, and to awaken in people the desire to harmonize their lives with truth and with God. It was to the divine aspirations of these pioneers of the spirit that Paramahansa Yogananda was responding by coming to America. Americans, he said, were ready to learn meditation and God communion through the practice of the ancient science of yoga. There's a footnote here. Yoga, a Sanskrit word meaning union, or more exactly, self-integration. Yoga is also a system of psychophysical techniques for helping men to achieve conscious union with the Infinite Spirit, God. The yogi, a practitioner of the yoga science, acquires outwardly also a vision of the underlying unity of all life. To continue then, it was in the capacity of one of modern India's greatest exponents of yoga that he was sent by his great teachers to the West. In my own life and heritage, the pioneering spirit in all its stages of manifestation has played an important role. Numerous ancestors on both sides of my family were pioneers of the traditional sort, many of them ministers of the gospel and frontier doctors. My paternal grandparents joined the great land rush that opened up the Oklahoma Territory in 1889. Other ancestors played less exploratory but nonetheless active roles in the great adventure of America's development. Mary Todd, the wife of Abraham Lincoln, was a relative of mine. So also was Robert E. Lee, Lincoln's adversary in the Civil War. It pleases me thus to be linked with both sides of that divisive conflict, for my own lifelong inclination has been to reconcile contradictions, to seek, as Indian philosophy puts it, unity in diversity. My father, Ray P. Walters, was born too late to be a pioneer in the earlier sense. A pioneer, nevertheless, at heart, he joined the new wave of international expansion and cooperation, working for Esso as an oil geologist in foreign lands. My mother, Gertrude G. Walters, was a part of this new wave also. After graduating from college, she went on to study the violin in Paris. Both my parents were born in Oklahoma. It was in Paris, however, that they met. After their wedding, Dad was assigned to the oil fields of Romania, where they settled in Teleagin, a small Anglo-American colony about 3 kilometers east of the city of Ploiești. Teleagin was the scene of my own squalling entrance onto the stage of life. My body, typically of the American melting pot, is the product of a blend of several countries, England, Wales, Scotland, Ireland, Holland, France, and Germany. It was Little Wales, the smallest of these seven, that gave me my surname, Walters. For Kriyananda is a monastic appellation that I acquired only in 1955, when I was initiated into the ancient Swami Order of India. The human body, through a process of birth, is a new creation. Not so the soul. I came into this world, I believe, already fully myself. I chose this particular family because I found it harmonious to my own nature, and felt that these were the parents who would best afford me the opportunities I needed for my own spiritual development. Grateful as I am to my parents for taking me in, a stranger, I feel less indebted to them for making me what I am. I have described them, their forebears, and the country from which they came, to show the trends with which I chose to affiliate. For whatever good I might be able to accomplish for myself, and, I hoped, for others. Everyone in this world is a pilgrim. He comes alone, treads his chosen path for a time, then leaves once more solitarily. His is a sacred destination, always dimly suspected, though usually not consciously known. Whether deliberately or by blind instinct, directly or indirectly, what all men are truly seeking is joy. Joy infinite, joy eternal, joy divine. Most of us, alas, wander about in this world like pilgrims without a map. We imagine joy's shrine to be wherever money is worshipped, or power, or fame, or good times. It is only after very distant roaming that, disappointed at last, we pause in silent self-appraisal. And then we discover, perhaps with a shock, that our goal was never distant from us at all, indeed never any further away than our own selves. This path we walk has no fixed dimensions. It is either long or short, depending only on the purity of our intentions. It is the path Jesus described when he said, "The kingdom of God cometh not with observation. Neither shall they say, Lo here, or Lo there. For behold, the kingdom of God is within you." Walking this path, we yet walk it not. For the goal, being inward, is ours already. We have only to claim it as our own. The principal purpose of this book is to help you, the reader, to make good that claim. I hope in these pages to help you to avoid, among other things, a few of the mistakes I myself have made in my own search. For a person's failures may sometimes be as instructive as his successes. I was born in Teliajin on May 19, 1926, at approximately 7 in the morning. James Donald Walters is the full name I received at christening in the little Anglican church in Ploiești. Owing to a plethora of Jameses in the community, I was always known by my second name, Donald, in which I was the namesake of a step-uncle, Donald Quarles, who later served as Secretary of the Air Force under President Eisenhower. James, too, was a family name, being the name of my maternal grandfather. It was my ultimate destiny, however, to renounce such family identities altogether in favor of a higher and more spiritual one. Mother told me that throughout her pregnancy she was filled inwardly with joy. "Lord," she prayed repeatedly, "this first child I give to thee." Her blessing may not have borne fruit as early as she had hoped, but bear fruit it did, gradually, one might almost say relentlessly, over the years. For mine is the story of one who did his best to live without God, but who, thank God, failed in the attempt.